Hello and welcome to Prime Lenses. I'm Ian. Each episode, I speak to a photographer about three lenses that have really meant something to them on their photographic journey. Perhaps they use them every day, in their kit bag, in their professional work, or maybe these are the things that they reserve for themselves in their spare time for their personal photos, perhaps attached to a camera they used as a child, or perhaps ones that got away, never to be used again, maybe attached to a defunct film format or an iPod Touch even. Whatever they are, I want to know about them because I want to dig into what we enjoy. And really, it's a thinly veiled conceit, an excuse for a conversation with people about really interesting work and this hobby stroke profession that obsesses us all. My guest today is Justin Sorensen. He's a New York-based creative director, photographer, and I came across his work on Instagram, where he photographs athletes and people taking part in sports around the city, which wasn't something I immediately associated with New York, and I think is why his stuff stood out to me, because he really captures the essence and the sense of taking part in like team and competitive sports in a way that is very kind of grounded and, you know, with the people taking part in it rather than sort of very grand, big, showy sports photography. I don't really think of sports in that way when I think of New York City. I think of street photography, which is something that we talk about in the conversation, but I think he captures a really interesting side of the city that I just haven't seen anywhere else. And so I thought, well, I've got to get him on the pod. And so he was very kind and gave up some of his time to have a little chat. So here is my conversation with Justin. How is the great city of New York today?
Yeah, we've been, kind of in the thick of spring, I guess, right now, where it's just like one day it might be like 50 degrees, the next day it might be like basically snowing still. So it's been, you know, February is a rough month in New York. And so I'm glad to be in March and kind of getting out of that a little bit. But the city's great. I mean, it's just like, it's such a playground for photographers and, you know, and the seasons really play into that so well. There's just so much to experience and so much to kind of document. So yeah, the city's amazing. I love it. I'm endlessly inspired by it. So it's great.
No, it's a cool place to be. I was over last November and we had a day to ourselves. And so I was able to make a pilgrimage to the firehouse from Ghostbusters and clear blue sky, and I just got the photos of like the, you know, the building and stuff, and those guys are endlessly patient with the like the trickle of people coming by constantly just to say hello and sort of pay their respects to that place. It's very cool. And the guy, there was, I bought a beanie for my son. He's a big fan. And I said, the person in front was like, hey, do you guys take cards? And the guy was like, it's cash only. And I was like, I'll bet it is. That's excellent. Like, you should keep all that money, like if you have to put up with this stuff. But yeah, so you've been out and about this week photographing athletes and stuff. Like, talk me through kind of where that stuff starts. You've got this, like you say, the whole city is a playground. You can go and, you know, there's always something going on the streets of New York. But you've chosen like athletes, and you've made your life as a photographer harder in a world that's obsessed with street photography. What about sports and athletes kind of inspires you to pick up the camera?
Yeah, I mean, partially comes from where my career has taken me in the past. So you know, prior to freelancing here in New York, I worked in house for a cycling brand in San Francisco. We made cycling clothing. It was very, very brand kind of heavy, authentic storytelling where, the CEO and the owner is just, you know, fanatical cyclist. And so if you worked there, you had to basically become a fanatical cyclist as well, because we were constantly at events all around the world, you know, photographing people, doing these insane adventures, you know, whether it's, you know, riding like 200 miles or whatever, but like, so I really kind of, I guess, fell in love with endurance athletes during that time and the documentation of endurance athletes. So that was kind of, and I was there for 6 years. So that has stuck with me to the point where, you know, now in my freelance career, the majority of my commercial work comes from athletic brands, whether it's running brands or cycling brands. That's, you know, kind of the core of my, you know, paid for commercial work. So I end up working with those athletes, and that's frankly, that's like kind of the space that I want to be in. I like telling stories of real athletes doing cool things, and the you know, the industry right now, and like, well, as far as like stories that brands want to tell, generally that's kind of how they want to tell it. They don't want it to be superficial, candy coated, you know, non-authentic storytelling. They want stories about people that are doing things. And so I get to kind of cover that. And New York is an insane city for runners. So when I moved here 2.5 years ago, I just kind of fell into like a bunch of different communities of running, running folks, and started documenting and working with them. And yeah, so now I work with a couple different brands, and yeah, so I'm out doing all kinds of different things. You know, some of the images that I posted this week are just like community-based runs in the city. So that's a whole that. So I'll go out and run and shoot at the same time, which is
right. Wow.
Kind of crazy. you know, I used to get out and like, you know, on a bike, it's one thing, but, you know, cause you're kind of more stationary, and, it's a little bit easier to make some photos that way. It's not as up and down as when you're running. So that's a whole different way of documenting that I've found challenging as a photographer, to kind of like, you know, be able to capture images that still work in that setting. That's been a really fun challenge, but there's just a lot of opportunities like that around the city, because I don't know, there's just a lot of people, and there's a lot of people doing really interesting things. So
yeah, well, it's funny, does that kind of relate to, because your background is interest in endurance sports and photography and stuff, does that sort of tie into what got you into photography in the first place? Like, what, when did you pick up a camera? Like, was it a relative inspired you, or, you know, what was it?
Yeah, cameras have been a, kind of a part of my life since really as long as I can remember. When I was a kid, I have, you know, photos my mom has given me of, you know, 4 and 5 years old walking around with the camera. So I've always had this kind of, I'm going to have a camera on me at all times. Mentality. And I don't really, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I don't really know where that comes from. You know, I think it's just kind of this, over the years, I kind of explain it as it's how I like to engage with the world. I'm a little bit introverted. I think a lot of photographers tend to be a touch introverted. I like to be behind the lens, not in front of it as much. And so it's kind of, it's this tool that allows me to kind of like break the ice, to kind of like break down barriers with like different happenings that are happening around me. And for me, it's just a really nice way for me to engage with the world and to engage with not only people, but places. And so I feel really comfortable walking around with the camera, and I have for my entire life. So yeah, when I was younger, you know, it was, it definitely was going on a lot of trips with me. You know, and when I was a kid, our trips basically looked like camping trips and skiing trips. And, I mostly remember skiing trips. And just, I loved kind of the adventure, get out into nature, kind of get lost, have a camera, take photos. And that's still what I love. And you know, when I'm like pitching stories to brands, it's definitely kind of more adventure based, and trying to like push that further and further, when it comes to, you know, kind of storytelling. So yeah, I mean, the camera has just kind of always been with me. And, I think that when I got turned on to endurance sports, you know, back in like, I guess it was probably around 2012 or so, maybe 2011. There was all this time, right? Like, we'd go out on bike rides for like 6 hours or something. And so we had so much time out there that it was like, yeah, we should definitely have cameras. There's so much to show. There's so much to, you know, share about where you've been and who you're with. And so it just made sense. And that's going to continue into my career now. I just find it kind of a great opportunity to tell a story.
Well, that starts to make a lot more sense now with your selection of lenses. So we can kind of use that as an excuse to talk about your first one, because that the first one, the thing that runs through all of your lenses is a kind of versatility, which is quite interesting from a kind of like they'll do a lot for you, right? So like your first one of the Sumilux 50, that goes all the way down to 1.4, which means you can use it for like a portrait. You can use it to capture the location you're in. It's fairly, it's not massive. It's a part of a small-ish system. Is that kind of part of the appeal that like that's what you value? Is that like that portability, or what attracts you to that one?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge fan of primes in general. Prime lenses are just
same.
I don't know. There's a simplicity to them, and I kind of, when I go out and shoot, I really I tend to have like a game plan about like, oh, I want to like, you know, maybe it changes, but I'll have a game plan going into it, whether it's just for me or it's for a brand or whatever. It's like, I have this kind of like, all right, this is what we're going to do. And I generally kind of tailor it around the look that I want from the lens that I'm going to use. And the 50 millimeters is just kind of, I don't know. I've at times tried to like go away from it, but I always kind of come back to it. 50 just like makes the most sense for me. Maybe it's like has to do with the versatility, like you're saying. You can still use it as a portrait lens, but you can also still get a pretty good, you know, you can still capture like the environment relatively well.
Depending if you stand on, back. You
know, if you stand back a little bit, yeah. But I like the 50 if you're going to carry it around. That's just my favorite. And that lens in particular is a beautiful lens. I mean, like Leica lenses, it's, you know, it can, you can get like real dreamy, nice bokeh on it, but it's, what I also love about that lens is that you actually kind of have to work for it. It doesn't just immediately take a great photo. It's got some, there's a fineness to it that makes you work. And it makes you slow down. And I think that like Leica products in general, like Leica cameras, like why I use them, is because they make you slow down to
get
a good photo. And really pay attention to your environment and really see your environment, hopefully in a different way from a different perspective. And so that lens and that system is, you know, it's like, that's my, like, I need to get back to the basics and like feel creative again. Like that's like where I go. So.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. My M constantly has a 35 on it. And it's a similar reason to what you're saying about having a 50. Like my growing up, my camera, it's on the shelf behind me, had a Canon MC, like film camera, point and shoot film camera, but it had a 35 F2.8 on the front. And so to me, that's what a photo looks like. That's the field of view that's sort of baked into my brain now, is that 35 field of view. And 2.8 is about the right kind of separation from the background. It sort of makes sense to my brain. So, but like you, I've got two lenses in my bag. I've got a 35 F2.8 and I've got a 50 Summicron, because I tend not to go lower than F2, because I find like I went to Lights Park last year in Wetzlar to go to like the mothership, and they let me try out a Q monochrome Q2. And I spent the afternoon running around and eating cake and drinking coffee and playing with this Q2. And then that evening when I was looking at the photos, I was like, all I've really done here is got great subject separation on a blade of grass. Like, it's not actually made me better at anything. I've just been excited by the fact that it goes down to 1.7 and I can't normally go that low. And so it didn't like, I didn't feel like it was making me better, but then you get the M back in your hand. You're like, oh, okay. But you know, it's, they speak to you on a certain level. The first time I held an M, I was like, oh, I'm a goner. This is, this is me now. Does it, because you've got a background in design, was that part of it as well? That kind of like Bauhaus sort of very simplified, refined lines?
Yeah. It's funny. It's kind of like what I was saying about, you don't really know the explanation for it, but it just makes sense to you when you're are doing it or you're holding it. I don't know. Yeah. It's, maybe it's how I grew up, but it's like, you know, as soon as you kind of like touch and feel some of that, some of those bodies, right? Those, some of those camera bodies from Leica, they're, they just make sense in your hand and they make sense to my brain and they make me want to make things, you know. I don't know what it is, but it's like, it's, it kind of comes back to that, really good design that is not overly complicated, right? It's like, we're going to strip it down to like what you need to do something really interesting, and we're not going to like do anything more than that. You know, and that's, those are the products and experiences that I really value, because I just think that there's just something like so simple and so beautiful about kind of stripping away all the things that you don't need.
Yes. No,
And you know,
exactly.
I use other cameras, you know, that have a million video settings and a million different like, you know, tweaks, and you know, they're fine, but like it's not really it doesn't feel like I'm at my creative best when I'm using those products. And yeah, the Leica cameras are just different. So
No, it's a weird thing, isn't it? It's like you say to people, when I first bought, I talked about this in the first episode, but when I was talking to my mate Danny, I was buying an M, and he almost checked in on me like someone like, you know, checks in on a friend and just like, are you sure? He's like, they're weird. Like, this is not like anything you've used before. Like, you sure? And I committed to it, and it was instant. Like, I held this thing. It was December 22 when it arrived in the mail, and like, you've made this expensive purchase. This thing arrives at your house. You open the box, and it sort of flops open in that lovely way that the box is used to. And then you pick it up, and I held it up to my eye. And there's this thing that Hugh Brownstone says about the Leica guy on YouTube about you hold it to your eye, and it demands you to it asks you to be better. And I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. And then I did, and I was like, oh no, I'm a goner now. Like, I get it; it makes sense, and this is going to test me. And it's actually, I was talking to Danny today about, this thing is making me better. Like, if I wanted to be on my bike or running or with the kids or whatever, I'd have stuck with my beloved Ricoh GR3, right? If I wanted autofocus and quick snaps and like and a greater likelihood of success. But this is making, I'm training when I'm using this. And I know I'm better from the time I've spent using it and learning and having just all those manual controls at my fingertips. Like, I know I am from using it. It's great. So, but it's a hard thing to explain to people who've not handled them, you know, because there is a barrier to trying this stuff out, which is a great shame. But yeah, if you've the means and you can try it, they're incredible tools for sure. Are there any photographers working in? I'm kind of obsessed at the moment with Andre Wagner and his work, and like looking at some of the New York street scene. Like, is there anyone working around in the city at the moment that you look at that you know has got you excited?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few people that I mean, there's tons of people in New York. It's
It's too
amazing.
many at the
Like,
moment.
it's crazy. I mean, because there's room for everybody too. I mean, it's funny. Like, summer last year, there was a massive influx of street photographers in New York. That was starting to feel a little bit crazy. So there's like particular corners that like certain crews of people hang out on, and you know, and it was getting a little bit out of control. But winter came, and then all of a sudden it was just like ghost town. There's like nobody down. So I'm out there, and there's a few people. But yeah, there's I was gonna pull up a couple folks. Andre, yeah, he's doing amazing work. He had a
Love
show
his
just up
stuff.
north of the city, that really, really phenomenal. Some of the other some of the people I only know by their Instagram. I've never, but a couple of the people. One person that was influential to me maybe 8 months ago is the handle is KPG NYC Street. It's Kevin Pineda Gold. He's a street guy. I did a walk with him, you know, like 8 months ago, and the work he's been putting out has been really great. And he works mostly with a monochrome M11 monochrome, which is super interesting to look at.
Oh yeah, I'm following them as well. That's pretty cool.
And then who's the other guy that's been paying a lot of attention? It's Let me see. I mean, there's people in like the sports space that are doing really cool stuff. D Hash, Dave Hash. He's doing really amazing stuff with a lot of running companies too, here in New York. I met his handle is Wrong Rob. He's another New York guy. And his work has been really kind of influencing me recently. He's doing more like kind of cinematic frames in color. He's doing a little bit more video right now. His stuff is really cool. I don't know. There's just like, you can get lost like looking at whatever all the cool stuff everybody's doing in the city.
Yeah, it's overwhelming sometimes looking at the stuff. I was really enjoying when I was out in Germany. Actually, I got the book in the end. There's a really good book of the California Porsche Owners Club, the R Group. Mm-hmm. And there's a book about that, the R Book, which is just fantastic. Just what an amazing mix of stuff. And that was on display when I was in Germany last year. And I sort of fell down that rabbit hole. And like, it's very hard, I think. I mean, he's taken some amazing shots. But when you've got like folks rattling around in like 1960s Porsches and California sunlight, you're like, this is what a great gig that is. You know, like, sorry, I've got to go off and live out there for a year and follow these guys around who seem like a really committed, wonderful bunch. But like the documentary and the story behind it, I think is really cool. So it's one of the reasons I quite like, I like your images too, as well as like the way you're in with a group of people who are committed to a thing and like seeing the same faces crop up, and like sometimes when they're looking at you in a certain way, or like that repetition, that familiarity, it's a little bit like street work in that way, but you're connecting with your subject a lot more in a kind of like as a viewer. Is that part of why you've started to put together the zine and do other things, so that you can kind of like tell a longer sort of story throughout? Or
yeah, I mean, I think ideally that's the work that I want to do. And I don't know if that's the, I don't know if that's the, if most photographers feel that way. I don't know. To me, like what I would like to work on more is like longer form, like kind of editorial storytelling.
Yeah.
And so my personal work, you know, right now that I focus on is always that, it's just like longer projects that, sometimes are with multiple people, sometimes are with one person. It depends. I have one project that's that I'm working on right now with a she's a marathon runner, but she's transitioning her career right now into an ultra runner. And she's like right on the cusp of I guess you call I think you'd probably technically call her a sub elite athlete. So she can just about qualify for like world teams, and you know, be on the same field for like Olympic teams, but she's not quite there. But she's really fast. Like, I mean, it's unreal. Like, she's a marathoner. I think, you know, she's like a 2:31 marathoner, is her time, which is pretty quick. And, the project started last fall after the New York City Marathon, and I began working with her. Basically what that means is I've gone out to her home. She lives up north of the city in the Catskills, and I go on a training run with her, and her training runs are anywhere from 18 miles to 30 miles. And I ride my bike because there's no way I can keep up with her running. Not a chance. So I ride my bike along with her. And it's a very like documentary style approach to you know, creating stills with her, where nothing is planned, there's no stops. I basically just ride along and we get what we get. And we just kind of tell the story that way. And we've done that about once a month through the winter months. So November, December, January, February. This is all culminating into like I said, she's transitioning from marathon to ultra. She's going to be, in France in May, running a 100 kilometer, road race. And it's like a big deal for her. It's, well, she's attempting to like, break the, European record, in that, which would be pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And as well as qualify for the world, the French world team for ultra, which is, would be pretty awesome too. So I'll be out there in May, at that event with her. But that's like an example of like these long stories, right? Where it's just like, let's go out and document it and see what we get. And when we kind of get to that end point, it's like, we'll turn it into something, you know? So.
Yes. Time and access. My favorite one of those, because I'm a big tech nerd, is Doug Menwes's Fearless Genius. That whole set of photos, I don't know if you know those, but he photographed in the Valley, like Steve Jobs at Next, and there's like a very young Jeff Bezos in his shots and just all that stuff. And it's an incredible collection of work. I'd love to do it because I work in video games as my day job. And I'd love to do that around a game studio. Like, I can't find any documentary photography of game development, just none. And so the idea that, like, it's just this untapped, like, I understand all the secrecy and everything that surrounds the industry, but like you're saying, if you can do something for a really long time and have those photos and have that stuff captured, then you can choose what to do with it. And then you can choose how to tell the story. You can do it in a way that isn't breaking NDAs. It doesn't have to come out that week. I think the modern day internet makes us think there's only value in something if it was like taken, you know, like we're not working for The Verge, right? Like, I don't have to take photos of these earbuds and have them on the website in 10 minutes. Like, you know, it's all the MotoGP guy that I was talking to the other day, where he covers the race and then like 20 minutes later, that stuff has to be in the press release to go out to talk about the team. And you need a photo that's well exposed, where the sponsors' logos are visible, where, you know, like, and it used to be that was film and they sent it off and didn't worry about it. And now that's all the photographer's job. Like, that's all changed, and is whatever the story is that they want to tell that they're excited by. Sorry, clock's ticking. Got to get this. It's got to go out on a press release, and that's it. So it's a tricky balance to, like, the creative aspect of this for sure. But no, that sounds like a really cool project. How long did you say you've been shooting with her?
Since November. So
cool.
It'll be about 6 months. Kind of by the end of it, and 6 or 7 months of work. So enough that is pretty interesting, because it really is just she kind of like capped it with the New York City Marathon, and then from there it's been training to an ultra, which has been, you know, a transformation of her body to take on those extra 60 miles or whatever it is.
Just an extra two marathons on top or whatever.
Yeah. So that, yeah, pretty wild.
That's amazing.
It's been fun to be a part of that. It's been fun to be a part of that. And, you know, it's just like one of those things where it's just like, I reached out to her, you know, just with this, you know, kind of like, hey, I got a few photos of you at the marathon. We became friends. We started talking. Mm-hmm. It was just like, oh, I'm doing this thing. Okay, let's do it together. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And I love that about kind of that type of work, where it's more free flowing, it's more organic, it's like it feels more real, and by the end of it, it's like, hopefully, like, the images kind of can convey that, you know, where it's just there isn't this massive, like, commercial agenda. It's just about people doing really cool stuff,
which I think is more likely to result in something that speaks to people. Like, I think if the people making something enjoyed making it, you can usually tell, like, you know, as opposed to, like you say, the kind of the more traditional sports photography we see, which is really just to sell us some shoes or some shorts or something, you know, like this sort of tells a bit more of an interesting story. But if you're a Leica shooter now, and shooting mostly with like M's and stuff like that, and the Q, talk to me about your second choice, which was the Nifty 50 Canon 1.8, I think, like the Japanese Sumilux, almost.
Yeah. I've used a 50 Canon for years. So, like, before the mirrorless, I was using the 5D for many years, and the 50 on the 5D that I had was like a real gem. I mean, it was just like super plastic and like very lightweight. It felt like nothing. It just felt like a piece of garbage. You know, it was that setup was my go-to setup for like big time, like, adventure cycling rides when I was with the company. And, just cause it was lightweight, you know, lightweight to get around. And again, versatile, because like you could be out in the middle of nowhere and you could still do like a portrait shot of somebody if you wanted, but you could also shoot while on the bike. It wasn't like, you know, you didn't have to be like too, when you're on the bike with people, you tend to be like a little bit close. So 50 is like, you gotta be a little careful there, but like, it works out. And then you would just get like weird effects from that lens. It was fun. Yeah. It, it, shooting into like sun, there was always like bizarre flares that would come out of it. And so it just, it was like a fun lens that I felt, I think, represents kind of like a just a childlike love of adventure. And yeah, so that's why I gravitate to that. And when I got the when I switched over from the 5D to the mirrorless Canon, I definitely had to pick one up. It's not the same. It's not quite as like it's not quite as emotional of a lens, I guess you'd say. It's a little bit more just kind of that, but it still works and it's lightweight and it is my go-to for like when I've been running alongside people, like because it's
Yeah, I'll bet.
lightweight and it's doable. So that lens is critical to the real like we're in it documentary, style that I have. Yeah, so it's one that I can't really like leave out of the bag, that's for sure.
No, it is, as you say, it's one of those unreasonably good lenses that has a real character as well to the rendering. Like it shouldn't work. You know, it's one of those ones where you're like, oh, that's just the entry level lens. And actually you could, I know folks who've used that stuff to shoot weddings and shoot events, and like nobody knows the difference between that and like a much more expensive lens. And especially if you correct colors and things like that later on or whatever. But no, it's for Play-Doh versatility. And the 5D is like the best deal in photography. Like if you go and pick up an original, like a first generation 5D and stick one of those lenses on, that's not going to cost you much more than $200. And that's an incredible setup. You know, like it's pretty, it's built like a tank. Like it's fairly robust. It can do some video if you want it to, which is insane. I remember when that first came out and they were strapping 5Ds on rigs to cars and to get like that cinematic footage out of this tiny, tiny package. It's an insanely important camera that, we've in the race since we've just shot off from, but no, it's cool. It's a shame to hear that the kind of the new mirrorless 50 isn't quite as characterful
It just,
somehow.
it
Is it a
just
bit too
lacks a little bit,
perfect?
but it's like, I don't know, there's just something about it where it's just, it's like, it's not that it's too perfect because it's not a perfect lens by any means. I think that it's like two in the middle almost,
Oh,
where
right. Okay.
like the older like 5D 50, it was pretty bad at like distortion and kind of I don't know, the images were just like could be very wonky that came out of it.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that it's like then it's just the trade-off is that it has character and it feels just a little bit more not perfect. And sometimes and I think that like a lot of the industry there's kind of a love of not perfect now, where it's a little bit messy and it's okay if everything is like not crystal clear focus, it's okay if color rendering is a little bit weird. I mean, it's like I don't know, there's that I don't know, it's just I think that the newer 50 is just a little bit too in the middle, to where it doesn't really have much to say, but it still works. Like I said, it's just, if coming from having used the older, I can tell a difference. It's just not quite as fun. It's not quite, the results are more expected. And I think what I kind of loved about the older ones is the results were like kind of unexpected what you'd get. Almost like, shooting film and like, you don't know what you got until you see it later, and sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't work out. I love that aspect of photography and like why I still love to shoot film whenever I can is there isn't that immediate answer to what you just did. You kind of have to like fingers crossed.
Do you find it's interesting? So do you find as you sort of make more photos and are longer in your kind of like your photographic journey, to give it that title, I suppose, do you find that sitting with images for longer and having a longer gap between making them and then kind of looking at them? I'm finding that is why I'm just curious as to whether that's a general thing, but I think a gap is really good because I don't think you know what you've got in the moment necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, there's a sweet spot that exists, but it also depends on what the subject matter is, what you were shooting and where you were mentally, and you know, I kind of what's the end goal for, you know, the photos that you know, all of that kind of feeds into that like equation of how long do I should I wait before I look at these photos?
Sometimes how long can you, if I guess if it's for work as well, you can't go, yeah, I'll come back to you in 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, ideal world, it's like, you know, there isn't that deadline, but there is generally, and it's generally a lot faster than you want it to be. But you know, with personal work, that's where I have the opportunity to kind of let that sit, sometimes longer than others. But I don't know, for me, it's like I like to give it, in most cases, I think any somewhere like around a couple weeks is like okay to then like kind of take a first look. But then, you know, then that like next like kind of editing process, it might take another couple weeks after that. And I try to not do too much at it one time, you know, kind of like take all these images and like just go through them and look at them and do nothing. Like do that a couple times, you know, and really be able to sit with them. And then, yeah, but then I'll go back and look at work, you know, that's like a year old and be like, holy shit, like, how did I miss this? This is great. This is horrible. Like, and that's what it's, so it's pretty tricky because it's very hard to like really see what you've made, until you can like take a step back and have context in it. Yeah. And again, like, you know, it's like if your intention going into a shoot might have been one thing and maybe you totally failed at that, but you got something really great out of it. But at the time, you're like, this is crap because that's not what I wanted. So that's, I mean, that's been the case as well with certain things that, you know, certain things that have certain shoots that have less control, which a lot of what I do has very little control. Like, as far as like, I don't do a lot of studio work. Most of my work is like on location in the field with people doing events or activities that are not necessarily curated, right? Like it's not like go and like do this for me 100 times. Like I do some of that stuff, but so yeah, I mean it's tricky, but you just have to kind of keep rolling with it and yeah.
Yeah,
I don't
but
know.
if I feel like that's a bit like that thing of like it makes you better, doesn't it? The available light, the not working with professional models, they're not, you know, like your photography suggests that you're able to work with that, which is really, that's an amazing skill to have, right? Like much rather, I find that more interesting, I suppose. I know that there's a world of work in setting up a studio and setting up lights and doing it properly, you know, like and understanding all of that, but somehow handling the serendipity and the chaos of the real world and sort of actual real situations strikes me as being a bit more interesting. You know, it's why the people I've picked to talk to are people like you and like Rob, the MotoGP photographer. He's got to compose a shot at 220 miles an hour and something might be happening. You know, someone might be about to crash and he's got to try and catch, you know, stuff like that. That to me is where there's a bit of like magic and sauce happening. You know, it's a bit more interesting. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
and I think
a
that
little bit of chaos.
that's where the crossover in my work, which you know, I really engage with like this concept of street photography and how I try to bring that into my commercial work as well. And where that might be super confusing for some brands, it's not for others. So it's just, you know, it's, but that's who I am, and kind of like. And if we kind of go back a little bit further, photography and like cycling days. So I studied music as an undergrad, and I studied jazz, and I was a big, you know, kind of improvisation and kind of reading the room and understanding what's happening and being able to like create on the spot was a big part of like who I was and who I am. And that has carried over into my photography where I can conceptualize and plan out exactly what I think I want to happen. Like when that all goes to shit and falls apart, what I'm really good at is improvising in the moment. And so that's kind of like a skill, that's a skill set that I bring and pitch to brands is that like, you know, we're going to go out there. And I'm gonna have you gotta trust me a little bit, but like we're gonna make some really great work because we're gonna utilize the environment for exactly, like it's what it can offer us. And what we're gonna get is something that's like much more authentic out of that.
Yeah, no, it comes out in the images. Like it's really great stuff. Like I really enjoy looking at it's a nice mix of, as you said, of commercial and kind of like a little bit of movement and a little bit of chaos in there. I was going to ask, because you mentioned shooting film when you can, what do you shoot? What's your preferred stock and what camera system are you using for your film stuff?
Yeah, currently I have a Leica M5 that I shoot
Love
with.
the M5.
M5 is like an
Such a it's
amazing
so
camera.
underrated, so underrated. The M6 Eclipse. Because I look at the M5. The M5 is like Timothy Dalton's Aston Martin. In like it's the one nobody looks at, and it's really interesting for
I
just
don't know why
the
I
design.
do not know. I mean, the M6 has just gotten like TikTok popular basically, but
Yeah.
and it's a great camera.
Sure.
Obviously, it's like, it's the more modern body style, it's smaller, but the M5 is an amazing camera. It was the last camera that was like handmade in Germany. It's like the precision and the feel of it is just it just feels like a beautifully made product.
Yeah.
The shutter sound is super unique in it. It's like whisper quiet. It's very
Yeah.
cool. It's a bigger body, which I think to some is like one of the things that people kind of pick on about it. But if I have big, like slight, like bigger hands, so it feels really good in my hands actually, and my hands can like fully hold it and not like cover up anything that's critical,
Right, yeah.
It's got this beautiful kind of like flat plane on the back, which
Yes.
feels really comfortable to rest your face against when you're, focusing in the viewfinder. I don't know. There's a lot about it that's I just really love shooting with that camera. Very
Yeah.
cool and just incredibly well made. So I have that, and then I have a Hasselblad 500 CM. That I love shooting with. And that's like my kind of it's turned into my street portraits camera. So last summer I was starting a project where I was, just walking the streets and walking up to people and asking for portraits, which was terrifying and exhilarating at the same time. It was the
Yeah.
first time I'd really kind of cross the threshold into like, hey, let's have a conversation and let's make a photo with people on the street. And it makes a lot of sense in New York because there's just a ton of interesting people, and people here, a lot of people here really like to talk, like to share, and they're open to it. And so you go to
Yeah.
like fun neighborhoods like Soho where people are, clearly dressing up and like, kind of
Yes.
playing the part, and it's like they want you
Yeah.
to take your photo. So
Yeah.
that camera turned into that for me. It was that's a really fun camera to shoot with. And then I've gotten recently into some like 90s point and shoots. So I have like a Ricoh GR. It's not like the it's not a fancy one. I can't remember. It's like from like 88.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And it is like it's like $10, it's like $10 camera. And that's pretty amazing. And I don't know, I think I have a Canon WR90, which is a water resistant camera from like 93 that I've been using. I don't know. That I just kind of like getting back into some of those older cameras that I used to have, like when I was a
Yeah.
kid. And that's been fun. The point and shoots
Yeah.
have been really fun, actually. I've been loving those. And the images you get off them, there's definitely something to film and just not thinking about what, how you think about how you're composing it, but you're not thinking about anything else. Just let the camera do what it's going to do. I like that as
Yes.
an experiment to see what the camera does.
Yes, no,
So,
completely. Yeah.
because yeah, it's like then I get the results and I'm like, oh, that's an interesting way to have seen that. That's not what I would have done, but like maybe I'll try that next time, when I'm shooting it on, my Leica or my Canon or whatever. Yeah, it's been really fun for that. Yeah, so and I've had other cameras in the past. Only recently have I like kind of my like collection has grown. Normally I'm like a very kind of like body to body person. Like
Yeah.
I don't really
No,
have the
I'm the
funds
same.
to collect.
Yeah, well,
So, but
I've been trying to have a one camera rule. Like, because what
yeah.
comes to me is the kind of like the stress. So I was a Ricoh GR person. GR3 was like my go-to for
Yeah.
years. Love that camera to pieces. It's incredible. And then when I got the M, I wasn't taking it out very much. And so I sort of came to the conclusion, like, if I'm going to commit to this thing and I'm going to learn it, and I'm going to like then I should remove all other cameras so I don't have another digital. And so, like, my mate Danny, who's borrowed a Q3 for the weekend this weekend because he's traveling, and he did want to take his SL again, which is understandable. And he's like, it's incredible. And I'm just like, no, like, I've just got to stay. And the one thing I allow myself is instant cameras. I will collect instant cameras until I die. Like, I've got about eight of various, like, Fuji Instax wides and squares, and a couple of
Nice.
Polaroids and an SLR 680 that I got from Brooklyn Film Camera, actually. And I it was during the
Nice.
pandemic, I sort of was talking to my wife because I saw they had one refurbed in stock, and they don't come up that often, with like the ultrasound autofocus and all the rest of it. And it's like the last great Polaroid. And so I spoke to my wife. I was like, so I'm gonna order. Like, it's quite expensive, but it's instant cameras are my one thing I will allow
Yeah.
myself. I'll let myself
That's
collect
cool.
those, but not the rest. I've got to kind of stay true. So this is, in a way, like, the only thing that's nearly as fun as buying a camera is talking to other people about their cameras. And then as long as you don't leave with like a need to acquire another one. One of the people I'm talking to soon is Ali, who runs the 1 month two cameras channel on YouTube, and she her collection of cameras is out of control. Like, messaging her and chatting to her is hilarious. Like, she's just like, there's this and there's that. And she's got a Casio watch camera that she's wearing at the moment, that she's got a laptop she bought off eBay that's running Windows XP. It's the only computer in her house that she can connect this watch to, and it's the same. It
Jeez.
takes 0.25 megapixel images.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a different level right there.
Yes, yeah. I think luckily she and her partner are both photography obsessed. But so that's kind of like your film cameras and some Polaroid film cameras. Your last lens that you chose is kind of the opposite end in some ways to, like, it's the most up to date in a lot of ways, and the most, it's the melding of those two worlds, I suppose. Talk a bit about your last choice.
Yeah, the 7200, right? That's the last one that I picked.
The Q, wasn't it? The Q28? Yeah.
I couldn't
Mean, you
remember
can
what
choose whatever you like.
I was going back and forth between a real like sports photography lens, but then also the Q. Yeah, so the Q, I mean, you mentioned the Q a couple times, the Q3, Q2. I had a QP years ago. And this is like a weird choice because you can't just buy the lens, because it's fixed on the body. But that lens, I don't know, maybe it was the camera, but that lens, I don't know why I sold that camera. I loved it. Actually, I do know why I sold it, because yeah, I'm like body to body only at that point. But I wish I still had that camera, because that lens, it just took really beautiful photos. I think it was the first time, I think I was probably the first 28 millimeter that I ever really shot with. I think it was exciting to begin shooting. At the time, I was shooting a lot of street in San Francisco. Really kind of getting up close to people, and kind of like breaking down another, barrier there. That lens was what that lens did that for me. And so I remember the feeling of those images. And I think having had that experience has like pushed me into the space that I'm in more in New York now, and like even more so into that getting up close to people and really trying to just create that emotion and that feeling of that closeness. There's so many people in New York, and you are very in each other's space a lot in a lot of places of the city. And what's super unique about most a lot of New Yorkers is that they're fine with it. It's like people just kind of accept that. And so, yeah, that I don't know, that camera, that lens, I think kind of opened that world for me a little bit, and forced me into that like uncomfortable space. And so, I think that's kind of why I hold it close.
Yeah, I do think that lens and that sensor combination, especially on that first generation Q, there was something really magical about the combination of all of those things together, like that fixed lens. Danny, who was talking about before, he's got this Q3 on loan, was telling me he's a big Q fan. It's how we started talking like 6, 7 years ago. And he's gone Q2 and then back to Q. And I think the thing is, there's a modern convenience with the now that that thing has like a 60 megapixel sensor in the Q3, and you can crop down. I mean, he was sending me sample images cropped down to the 90 mil crop, and it's still a few thousand pixels wide. So it's still very usable in a way that is it's sort of surprising. It's surprisingly sharp, surprisingly low aberration and distortion on the lens. And it's an incredible, and they haven't changed the lens in like the best part of a decade. It just works. And so I think it's just a bit special that there's some magic in that one. I think the first generation Q, if I was going to allow myself to have another body kicking around, because as you say, can't get that lens any other way.
Yeah, no. I wish they would release it like for the end system, but it wouldn't be the same.
No.
And I think that's that's it's just a unique feature of that system, the Q system. So
Yeah, that's wild. Great camera.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, maybe one day. I saw a QP used online the other earlier
Yeah,
today
I
when I was
mean, you've
looking.
got to, how, I mean, how much are they now? Like, they can't be too bad, right? Now the
About, I
Q3,
mean, yeah,
are
they
they
can be
still?
had. No, well, I mean, they still command a premium because of the red dot on them. But they're about £2,000 for a, and they're
2,000.
fairly well looked after, generally. Like
That's
the people.
pretty
Yeah.
spendy still.
It is when you compare to like what else would you get that's similar? Like the only thing that's similar is like Sony's RX, and they still command a bit of a premium because Sony stopped making them so long ago. So like that 40 some megapixel, with the 35 mil, not a 28, like it's not quite the same thing. And then there's the Ricoh GR, which again is not quite the same thing. It only goes down to 2.8, and the magic trick of the Q is that you can use a 28 mil lens for a portrait and get away with it because you'll get a bit more of that separation if you want to. If you it's just that versatility. It's unreasonable. Like once you slap a 60 megapixel sensor on the back of it, and I'm predicting that when Danny messages me after his weekend away, that the thing that's going to come back to me is that like the Q3 is just unreasonably good in a bunch of ways, but that he's gone back to his original Q because he loves that color combination and lens combination. It's just, but you can't run away from the versatility of such a high resolution sensor. Like the future is going to be weird, right? Like incredibly high resolution sensors, and it won't matter. Like especially for posting on phones and things like that. Like, crop that thing to death, and you won't notice because it'll be what, like a gigapixel sensor behind an incredibly perfect lens.
I think that that's where a lot of people talk about the 20, like a 24 meg sensor being like kind of the last like more authentic street style digital camera. Like anything beyond that, it just kind of changes, I think, the purpose. And not to say that that's wrong or there's anything wrong with that, but I think that it does influence kind of the experience of what it means to kind of like be on the street shooting, as soon as you're able to crop so tightly. So it's just a different thing. I don't know. I think that
Yeah,
there's
no, I know what you
value in
mean.
it all, right? It just depends what you're trying to do. And there's no like, this is right, that is wrong, that's for sure. But
No, definitely not. However, so I was in London recently because where we live is very rural in the Highlands in Scotland. But when I was in London, I was getting photos, and what was amazing was with an M11, like photos across a bridge of a building, but I could cut it, like, you know, not, so not having to run around with a bag full of lenses and being able to kind of make the thing that you had in your head to the degree that you need to. Like, I'm not burdened by this being my job. I'm not a commercial. Like, that's my constant mantra to myself, is that, like, I took my M with me to the MotoGP last year, and it's like, this isn't my job. I was there immediately worrying about coverage, and like, YouTube and Instagram have convinced us all that we need to worry about being commercial photographers. And it's like, what if I just, I'm extremely fortunate and I have some really great tools and I'm allowed to use them and I can just be at play. Just do that. Like, don't worry about, you know, I shot MotoGP with a 90 millimeter Voigtlander manual lens, right? And I was happy with what I got. It's not anywhere near commercial grade, but I was there and they meant something to me. And there's like, you know, three or four, and you're learning, right? So,
yeah.
But yeah, so.
I feel like that experience that you just talked about, like, if you go back and look at those images, like, a year later or 2 years later, you're going to be like, so pleasantly surprised. You're gonna be like, that is some of the coolest stuff I did.
Yeah.
Where at the time you might have been like, a little disappointed, I don't know, but like,
yeah, I'm not quite.
That's like the perfect project that is just like, no, these have like, I don't know. There's the imperfections become like the perfections, in my opinion.
Yes.
At that point, where it's just like, you know, what I struggled with is like what I love about this photo.
Yes. Yeah. So. There's a really good blog that I read for a while. The guy stopped writing now. He did a thing. It was the Leica Lenses for Normal People blog, which was really fun. And it had I only discovered it recently. I didn't know it when he was writing it. And there was a description of my favorite lens, which is the Zeiss 35-28 that I constantly bolted to the front of my camera. And he described it as, it's the lens, it's the businesswoman in a meeting who goes out and pops an edible instead of a glass of rosé. It's like, you know, it's like, it's unexpected, but it's a really pleasant surprise. It's like, that's what that lens is. And like, I want to use lenses like that, you know, that are like your 50, where, you know, to go full circle,
yeah,
where we started, right? Like the one that will surprise and delight you, rather than, because it's not my job. I don't have to get the same result. And actually, I think if you're putting stuff in front of people, I'm not sure we want perfection, you know, perfect smoothness, perfect curves, get my red book out and see what the curves are on this lens versus that lens. Like, just, did I like it? Was I happy with the image? Did it mean something to me? And did it mean something to the person who was in it? If I was giving it to them, then job's good, right? You know, doesn't matter what I used, but yeah. Absolutely. Which is the whole point of these conversations. I was talking to you. But yeah, thank you so much for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for reaching out and putting this together. I think it's an awesome, just kind of, you know, way to engage and tell some stories and meet some new people and build networks. And it's awesome. So
yeah, thank you. Just for fun. Cool. Thanks, man. So there it is. That's me and Justin talking about photography in New York. My thanks again to Justin for taking the time to sit down and have a chat with me about stuff. I really enjoyed it. Nice to see some love for some Leica 50mm glass out there. And the Q. I do wonder, in these kind of 9 initial conversations I'm having, how often the Leica Q is going to come up. I feel like, for all of the internet buzz around the Fuji 100V, I feel like that fixed lens full frame camera is going to come up again and again. I don't know. I've got a hunch. I need to find my GR3 people. That's who I need to find. Anyway, I'm going to go and look for GR3 people. If you don't have one, go off and look for a GR3. Until next time, thanks for listening.